All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Guiding Light. And it's good to be here with you again. I've been gone for about a week. I went on a vacation with my mom. I know some of y'all saw that in Facebook. We had a wonderful time together, and she left this morning and went back to Alabama. So I am getting back into the groove of being home again. And as I mentioned, my computer is being very slow, like it's mad at me for not paying attention to it for a week or something. I'm sure it will come back to its normal self. If it doesn't, I'll take it in and ask the geeks at Best Buy to have a peek at it. Because of the way my computer is performing, I'm not even going to try to open up YouTube or iTunes or anything like that and play a song because it just would take a very long time. So what I am going to do is just go directly into the teaching. And what we're looking at right now is the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And we're in the middle of a section called Self and Individuality. And it was 2 weeks ago when I was here. I think before I start reading from the book tonight, I'll talk a little bit about kind of a review of what we looked at 2 weeks ago. Because in my humble opinion, what we looked at 2 weeks ago is really critical to the understanding that we're one. And it isn't what most people talk about. It isn't what most people teach about, and it isn't what most people understand. And so therefore, if you were here 2 weeks ago and you heard it, you might not have felt clarity, because sometimes when you hear something that seems completely different for the first time, the mind doesn't quite let it in. So it might be helpful just to hear it again, and some of you maybe didn't even hear it. So what we were really talking about 2 weeks ago is what most people refer to as reincarnation. And, of course, most people think of reincarnation as the reincarnation of me as an individual soul. So, for example, and I'm just going to make some stuff up here. So please don't anybody take seriously anything that I'm about to say about previous lives. But, you know, the idea of reincarnation might be, oh, yeah, many lives ago, you know, I was a Chinese merchant, you know, and I was very, very rich. And I studied directly under the master, Lao Tzu, and then the lifetime after that, I was actually a slave in Egypt, a Jewish slave, and I was there when Moses came and set us free. I wasn't anybody special, but I was a part of the group of people that got to walk through the Red Sea when it was split, you know, and all of that. And then the lifetime after that, et cetera, right? And if that were true, separation would be true. If I had an individual soul that was different than your individual soul, and I reincarnated as persons, and as certain persons, and you reincarnated as different persons, separation would be true. If I had a constancy about my soul over many lifetimes, and you had a separate, different soul over many different lifetimes, then separation would be true. So the way most people understand reincarnation, based on the idea of me as an individual soul, is not true. It's an ego distortion of something that does actually occur. There is a type of reincarnation that is true. And that's what Ramana Maharshi was talking about 2 weeks ago when we were here. And I mentioned that it's very difficult to share about this without a visual aid, but I think that, you know, I didn't hear gentle healing on Tuesday night, but I sent Jacqueline a vision. Someone wrote to me and said he had this vision that he wanted to share. He's actually going through gentle healing, I think, as self-study. He's in year one. And as he was contemplating the lessons and the tips, he had this vision. And really, that vision was the same thing as this teaching that I did 2 weeks ago here. So I sent that to Jacqueline. I asked her to read it. But, of course, I don't know what happened, and I don't know if she had time. So if you heard that, then you might have already had a review of this. But the visual aid that I use is I asked you to imagine a ball of dough, a big ball of dough. You know, like let's say it's the size of a basketball, and it's just a ball of dough. And that ball of dough represents consciousness. And then what appears to be us individual people. You know, if you just imagine that ball of dough has like long, thin pieces of like spaghetti kind of coming out of it. But the spaghetti is never cut and separated from the ball of dough. So every piece of yeah, there we go. The cloud and the tentacles. That's it, Anne. That's the same. Thank you for reminding me exactly of what the vision was. So the ball of dough then has all of these pieces of spaghetti growing out of it. If you're at the end of a piece of spaghetti and you trace it back, you're going to get back to the ball of dough, right? So there's this apparent separation. There's this apparent difference because there's all these different pieces of spaghetti coming out of the ball of dough, except that they're all connected. And each piece of spaghetti represents one of us. And these pieces of spaghetti, which are actually persons, have different experiences in their lifetime. They repress different things in their lifetime. They allow different things to be healed in their lifetime. But one thing that they all seem to have in common is they all believe that they're individual. You know, whether I seem to be a rich woman who feared losing my money all of my life and was controlling and manipulative, anything I did, I did. Anything I felt like I had to do, I did to maintain my money, right? And you were a poor, generous person who gave everything you had, but tended to be, a bit jealous of those who had more than you at the same time, right? You know, we'd have different experiences. We'd have different things that we repressed and thought about. You know, or you could say our ego stories were different. But what we both had in common is that I believed I'm an individual and you believe that you're an individual, right? Well, at the end of a lifetime, just imagine that what happens is this piece of spaghetti gets drawn all the way back into the ball of dough. Like, you know, imagine yourself sucking up a piece of spaghetti all the way into your mouth. And imagine that this ball of dough that represents consciousness has that ability. And at the end of a lifetime, it kind of goes, and it sucks that piece of spaghetti all the way back into the dough so that piece of spaghetti no longer exists as a piece of spaghetti. It is now just a part of the dough. You know, just like a drop of water dropped into the ocean is now a part of the ocean. But where that piece of spaghetti was sucked back into the dough, there's a little imprint. And that imprint represents the unresolved false beliefs that still existed at the end of that lifetime. One of which is most definitely the idea that I am an individual. But it's just an imprint on the ball of dough. There is no more spaghetti where that piece of spaghetti once was. And then as things move on, a completely different piece of spaghetti begins to form out of the dough right where that imprint was. And as it forms, it comes into being with those same beliefs, those same repressions, including the belief, I am a separate person. And it lives out a lifetime. And again, some things maybe are healed. It's even possible that new things are new tendencies are adopted because of the experience of that lifetime. And when that person dies and that piece of spaghetti gets sucked back into the ball, it leaves another little imprint. But it's not the same piece of spaghetti as an individual soul having multiple lifetimes. It's consciousness apparently having multiple lifetimes through the filter of the impressions that were left on consciousness when the apparent individuals were reabsorbed into consciousness. So what this means is when we are healing our false beliefs, and especially that false belief that I am an individual, we're actually healing all of consciousness, which I know you guys have heard this teaching before, but this is kind of technically how it works. Using a symbol, of course. There is no big ball of dough in the sky. So let's imagine for a moment that in this lifetime, you become completely, fully enlightened. That in this lifetime, you let go of all false beliefs, including the idea that you are an individual, and you wake up to the awareness that you are consciousness. Well, the lifetime, the body, personality that you appear to be will have an end, and it will get sucked back into to consciousness. But there will be no imprint there. There will be no imprint left in that spot. You know, again, using symbols. It's not, I don't think it's as nice and neat as a particular location on consciousness, but we're using symbols here. And so what Ramana Maharshi was saying to us 2 weeks ago when I was teaching was that while we are in body, while we are pieces of spaghetti, our job is to heal or to awaken or to become enlightened. So that when this body ends and we are reabsorbed into consciousness, we do not leave imprints on consciousness. That what we leave behind is a clear space, an emptiness. So again, if you look at that, you know, in a way you could say that there is something happening within the fourth principle of God, within manifestation, that is like reincarnation, except it's not the reincarnation of an individual. It's new manifestations born out of consciousness and affected by previous imprints that have not been healed. And the ego doesn't really like this because the ego likes to think, the ego being the belief that I am an individual, the ego likes to think that somehow I, the individual, am eternal, that I have an eternal soul and that I have multiple lifetimes. When actually the multiple lifetimes are manifestations of consciousness. For the apparent individual, there is only one lifetime. And when people believe they are the apparent individual, that sounds like really bad news. But awakening is realizing you aren't the apparent individual, you are consciousness. And even beyond that, life awareness, but first we'll awaken to consciousness, right? And consciousness has all of these lifetimes. Consciousness is everything in manifestation. Consciousness has no end. The temporary manifestations end all of the time, but consciousness is ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. And this is why if you ever listen to Ken Wapnick, I only listened to him a little bit, but enough to know that in some of his teachings, although he talked about Jesus a lot, In some of his teachings, he was very clear that there is no Jesus. Because Jesus was a piece of spaghetti coming out of the dough, right? A temporary manifestation. A Course in Miracles talks about this too in the clarification of terms. A temporary manifestation with a beginning and with an end. But because during the lifetime of that temporary manifestation, enlightenment was reached, when that temporary manifestation was reabsorbed, it did not leave an imprint. It left clarity. And that clarity belongs to us all. That's why when Jesus says that he awoke for all of us. Right? That clarity belongs to us all. We all have access to that clarity. And you can access that clarity and call it Jesus if you choose. Or you can call it Holy Spirit. Or you can call it my higher self. Or you can call it God. Or you can call it Ramana. Or you can just call it anything at all. But it's the clarity of consciousness that is available to all of us because, in this case, and of course there's more than this one man, but in this case, because one man lived his lifetime in order to let go of all false beliefs, including the belief, I am a man. And when that reabsorption occurred, there was no imprint, which means only clarity is in its space. And we all have access to it. And, of course, that's happened many times now, right? There hasn't been just Jesus. Thank goodness. So that's what we looked at 2 weeks ago. That's kind of a little review. Hopefully that is somewhat clear. Someone might ask, well, what about if I have memories of previous lifetimes? Those previous lifetimes belong to consciousness, and you are consciousness. So, you know, I don't think it's unusual for there to be memories of lifetimes. I also think sometimes they're pure fantasy. I think both happen. I think both happen. The mind likes to make stuff up, too. Really, what you only need to focus on is what is I. What is the I that had those previous lifetimes? It's consciousness, not me, an individual, right? All right, good, good. I see at least a couple people acknowledging that that was clear, so good. So what we will do now is we'll just go back into this section, and I think it's going to change topics now, which is why I wanted to do the review, because it starts off with the question, what is the significance of the crucifixion? So I think we're done talking about reincarnation, and we're probably going to shift into something else. If any of you are trying to follow along in your own books, this is the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. This is on page 59, and it's actually the first devotee question on the page, but it's about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way down the page. And the question is, what is the significance of the crucifixion? And this is Ramana Maharshi's answer. The body is the cross. Jesus, the Son of Man, is the ego, or the I am the body idea. When the Son of Man is crucified on the cross, the ego perishes. And what survives is the absolute being. It is the resurrection of the glorious self of the Christ, the Son of God. So one thing I want to say, first of all, Ramana Maharshi is speaking symbolically, meaning he's saying the cross symbolizes the body. And the man named Jesus symbolizes the ego, or the I am the body idea, right? He's not really saying that Jesus was the ego or anything like that. However, we all know that at some point in Jesus's life, he did have the I am the body idea. And in fact, it appears that idea was still with him in the Garden of Gethsemane, if you read the Bible, because he had great fear about what was coming. He had great fear about losing the body life, right? And it's very possible that that was completely let go of in the Garden of Gethsemane, and that his enlightenment happened then. And the reason I say it's possible is because after he comes out of the Garden of Gethsemane, if you read the Bible very carefully, there is absolutely no more fear. He is completely willing for anything that's going to occur. There's no defense in him at all. It's also possible, that the final enlightenment actually occurred physically on the cross. I mean, the truth is we just don't know. So Ramana Maharshi isn't speaking about the historical Jesus here. He's speaking about the symbol of the crucifixion. So, for example, if you happen to be looking at a Catholic cross, the crucifix, where Jesus, the body of Jesus, is hanging on the cross, then you would look at that with the symbology, and you would say that is the I am the body idea. And it's hanging on the cross because the I am the body idea is suffering, right? The idea of the crucifixion is suffering. Most Christians certainly see it as that Jesus suffered for us, right? So when you see Jesus hanging on the cross, it's Jesus represents the I am the body idea, and the cross represents the suffering that idea causes. And so in that way, you could say that every one of us who still believes, I am the body, we are currently being crucified by that idea. However, he says that when the Son of Man, and again, talking about Jesus as a symbol, when the Son of Man is crucified on the cross, right, in that story, the ego perishes. So as that body that we call Jesus hangs on the cross, the I am the body idea dies. And he says that is actually the resurrection. And of course, if you look at other Christian crosses, not the Catholic crucifix, but other crosses, they do not have Jesus on the cross. And that's because their crosses are supposed to represent the resurrection after his body was removed from the cross. But again, Ramana Maharshi is speaking symbolically. There's no factual, historical matter that he's attempting to address here. And what he wants us to know is that freedom or resurrection is the equivalent of the death of the I am the body idea, which we could also call the death of the belief that I am an individual person. The death of the personhood, if you use the language of NTI, 1 Timothy. Some people call it the death of the ego. But it's the end of an idea about what I am. In fact, you guys are in NTI Hebrews now, if you're in Gentle Healing. In NTI Hebrews, it says that the idea of Jesus died. Right? And it's talking about for Jesus, for that apparent man, right? The idea of Jesus died. So when the idea of Regina dies, or the idea of what fill in the blank with your name dies, that is the end of the I am the body idea, and that is the resurrection or awakening. So the real error, the real mistake that we make is identifying ourself as this person. And when that mistake is erased, corrected, then we know the true self. Now the devotee, of course, still thinking, this devotee might be a Westerner, or it could have just been a Christian Indian. Even Ramana Maharshi, I don't know if you know this, went to a Christian mission school when he was in school. So certainly there are Christians in India, especially in southern India where Ramana Maharshi is at, Tamil, because that is where, so they say, that Thomas went after Jesus died and was resurrected and ascended. the disciples went in different directions, and they say that Thomas went to India, and in fact, they say that Thomas went to what is now called Chennai, which is, geographically fairly close to Tiruvannamalai, and the area where Ramana Maharshi was raised. The same, it's in the same state, Tamil. And there, you know, he spread the word of Christianity, and there are many, many churches in Chennai. Many, many churches in Pondicherry, and I'm sure there are other churches scattered throughout that southern region of India. So this may have been a Westerner, because many Westerners came to see Ramana Maharshi, or this may have been an Indian who was raised with Christian teaching. As you'll notice, he's even though Ramana Maharshi gave him what I perceive to be a very clear answer, it doesn't appear that he was able to hear it, because his next question is, but how is crucifixion justified? Is not killing a terrible crime? So the symbology that Ramana just shared about the crucifixion is the I am the body idea. And when the I am the body idea ends, that's the resurrection, right? That symbology was completely lost on this particular devotee. He's still looking at the historical story and saying, but how could they do that, you know? But how is crucifixion justified? Is not killing a terrible crime? So Ramana Maharshi answers, everyone is committing suicide. The eternal, blissful, natural state has been smothered by this ignorant life. In this way, the present life is due to the killing of the eternal positive existence. Is it not really a case of suicide? So why worry about killing? Now, of course, Ramana Maharshi, again, is speaking symbolically only, because the true self cannot be killed, right? The true self cannot be smothered out. Even ignorance is based on the existence of the true self. Because even in ignorance, there's awareness, right? It's my attention, which is made from awareness. It's my attention that I cast on some worry problem or some grievance or some fear or some self-hatred, right? And let it spin and spin and spin in my mind until it creates grooves in the brain and it's completely habituated to be worried or fearful or you know, self-loathing or jealous or anything else. Guilty, you know, anything else. But without awareness, without the attention that comes from awareness, even that ignorance could not be manifested. So when Ramana Maharshi says that ignorance snuffs out the true self and that is suicide, he's just speaking symbolically. Yet it does seem to do that. You know, it's not an unfair symbol, because when people are completely ignorant, they are completely unaware of their true self. And many of you are aware of that. I mean, many of you either know from current experience or from recent experience that you can get completely caught up in worrying about something or having a grievance about something or, you know, being jealous about something or even desiring something. And when you're completely caught up in that, there is no, even though you are absolutely aware and actually your awareness is at peace, there is no awareness of that. The awareness of your peace is lost. Even though it's still there, it's the foundation on which your suffering is built. So it's kind of a funny answer, you know. I mean, I don't know how I would feel about it if I was this devotee. If, you know, I asked, what does the crucifixion represent? And he gave me an answer I didn't understand. I said, but isn't killing wrong? And he said, well, you're committing suicide all of the time, so, you know, why talk about killing? I don't know how, you know, how that would strike me if I was in this person's position. But what Ramana Maharshi seems to be saying, at least the way I hear it, is why are we worrying about whether what happened to Jesus 2,000 years ago was right or wrong, instead of focusing on our own atonement? Atonement meaning correction, the correction of the error about who I am. Instead of worrying about whether Jesus should or should not have been crucified, or even worrying about whether he was or was not. You know, people get into these arguments too. Did he live or did he not live? Is he just a myth? You know, was there a body resurrection or was there not a body resurrection? Was he born of a virgin or was he not born of a virgin? You know, instead of getting caught up in all of that, it really doesn't matter at all. Why not just focus on realizing the self yourself? That's really what Ramana Maharshi is saying. Why talk about killing when you're committing suicide? Why not find out how you are committing suicide so that you can stop doing that yourself? So again, the devotee asks, but how is crucifixion justified? Is not killing a terrible crime? And Ramana Maharshi says, everyone is committing suicide. The eternal, blissful, natural state has been smothered by this ignorant life. In this way, the present life is due to the killing of the eternal positive existence. Is it not really a case of suicide? So why worry about killing? Okay, so now the devotee, and I'm going to look up a word because he's going to refer to a word here. Hold on one second. Let me get it ready. A Sanskrit word, which of course I don't know these very well. Okay, it's just we've looked at this one before. It's the Nirvikalpa Samadhi, which is an advanced state of meditation in which there is no awareness of the world. So the devotee says, Sri Ramakrishna says that Nirvikalpa Samadhi cannot last longer than 21 days. If persisted in, the person dies. Is this a fact? And just to point out, this might even be a different devotee, because I don't think this is all one conversation like it is in I Am That with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. I think that the person who put these conversations together took different pieces of different conversations and organized them under one topic. Even though, interestingly, the person who wrote this book, you know, organized this book, is the same person that wrote I Am That. That, you know, listened to Nisargadatta's conversations, recorded them, transcribed them, and wrote I Am That. It's the same individual, although I can't remember his name right now. And his name isn't on either book, so I can't look it up either. So again, this might be a different devotee, but the question is, Sri Ramakrishna says that Nirvikalpa Samadhi cannot last longer than 21 days. If persisted in, the person dies. Is this a fact? Okay, Ramana Maharshi is going to use another Sanskrit word, so let me look it up so that I'm ready. Okay, the Sanskrit word is prarabdha, and I'm probably really saying that wrong. Prarabdha, and it's the result of one's past actions encountered in the present life. So it sounds like it's similar to the word karma, prarabdha. So Ramana Maharshi says, when the prarabdha is exhausted, the ego is completely dissolved without leaving any trace behind. This is the final liberation or nirvana. Unless prarabdha is exhausted, the ego will rise up, as it may appear to do in the case of, another word I don't know, hold on. Of a realized soul, jiva muktas. So, when I'm going to use the word impressions because of the story I told a while ago about the dough and the spaghetti, and when the spaghetti gets sucked in, if it hadn't let go of the I am an individual or the I am the body belief and all the other false beliefs, it leaves an impression, right? And then a new piece of spaghetti forms through that spot of impressions and has the same impressions and lives out a lifetime with those beliefs embedded in it, unless it heals those beliefs. So Ramana Maharshi is saying that when those impressions are exhausted, in other words, when we have lived a life where we have seen through all of those impressions, right? We're living a life for the purpose of clarity, you know, clearing away all false ideas, all false beliefs. He says when the impressions are exhausted, the ego is completely dissolved. And he says without leaving any trace behind, which is exactly what I spoke about. I said that when a truly enlightened being gets sucked into the spaghetti, gets sucked back into the ball of dough, I mean, that there would be no impressions, right? It doesn't leave any trace at all. So when the impressions are exhausted during a lifetime, the ego is completely dissolved without leaving any trace behind. And he says this is the final liberation, also called nirvana. He says unless the impressions are exhausted, the ego will rise up, as it may appear to do in the case of some realized beings. So he seems to be saying that you can be self-realized and yet still have some impressions that still need to be healed. And we hear people talking about this. We hear people saying that they know themselves as consciousness. They know who they are. And yet sometimes old conditioning still shows up and they have to work through it. In fact, if you read Byron Katie's book, 1,000 Names for Joy. You know, she talks about her awakening experience in that halfway house. And after that, she knows who she is. She never gets confused. She never goes back and thinks, I'm Katie. She knows she's consciousness from that point forward. And yet there's still conditioning that arises that she needs to work through. And she uses the work to work through her own conditioning as it arises. So it looks like what Ramana Maharshi is saying and what Byron Katie is saying and what some others say is that self-realization can occur, but it is not the same as the ego totally dissolved, which we might call enlightenment. There are still things that have to be worked through. It's just that maybe they're easier to work through now because you know who you are and you know these are faults, right? And so since the question was, that a man cannot stay, or a woman, anyone, could not stay in nirvikalpa samadhi longer than 21 days, or the person would die. Ramana Maharshi seems to be answering that if the impressions have not been exhausted, that is probably true because the ego will rise up. You can't stay in that awareness of no world unless you are fully enlightened. Then when you are fully enlightened, you can stay in that awareness of no world. You can live in that awareness of no world when you are fully enlightened, when there are no more impressions that need to be purified or healed or seen through. But if there are, the ego will rise up and, of course, you will return to the world. And what's interesting about that is, again, I know I talk about her a lot, but if you read Bernadette Roberts' books, What is the Self and the Experience of No Self, she talks about awakening from the idea that she's a person. Yeah, so awakening from the idea that she is Bernadette. She awakens from that to consciousness, to knowing herself as consciousness. And in fact, she awakened to consciousness. I can't remember if it was 17 or 19, but it is young. You know, she was very young. But then the majority of her life, all the way up to probably when she was around what we call a senior, right, an older person, for the majority of her life, she was spent awakening from consciousness to the absolute. So while she was awake to consciousness, she no longer believed, I am Bernadette, right? She was self-realized. But she was not yet fully enlightened. That was the mission of her entire lifetime, was to take that self-realization and use that self-realization to become fully enlightened. And then she has an experience much later in life where she awakens completely from even the idea, I am consciousness, and is fully self-realized. And at that point, is fully enlightened. And at that point, there are no impressions at all. As Ramana Maharshi says, the ego is completely gone, even what I call the divine ego, the I am consciousness idea. And there is no trace whatsoever. So it seems like if someone is awake to consciousness, but they still have some conditioning, some impressions to work through, they will go in and out of this type of samadhi where there's no awareness of the world. And in fact, Bernadette Roberts talks about that. She called it ecstasy. That was her word for going into this state of meditation where she had no awareness of the world. And she said she would go into ecstasy, but it was always temporary. It always ended. Right? She would come back to the world. But when she came back to the world, she did not come back as Bernadette. She came back as consciousness. The idea, I am Bernadette, was already gone. But she would come back to consciousness, to unity consciousness. She'd see everything as consciousness, but she would come back to that. And then she would go into ecstasy and then come back to consciousness, right? And she had this experience the majority of her life. And then she talks about how she went into ecstasy and never returned. Right? That's when the ego left no trace. All impressions were completely healed or purified. So the idea that a man can go, or a woman, can go into ecstasy or samadhi for no more than 21 days, that would refer to someone in the middle stage, awake to consciousness or awake to the second principle of God. That would not apply at all to someone who has awakened to the first principle of God, the absolute life awareness, because in fact, once they awaken there, there is no coming back to an awareness of the world. From that point forward, there is only the awareness of the absolute. And that's the end of that section. That was called Self and Individuality. And even though I really don't like crossing over from one section into another section during a session, I don't know how to use up these next 15 minutes unless I do that. So I'm going to have to go ahead and move on to the next section, which is called Self-Realization. And so we have a devotee asking, how can I attain self-realization? And Ramana Maharshi says, realization is nothing to be gained afresh. It is already there. And you see, this appears, now if you're a real strict reader, real strict literal reader, this appears to contradict what he just said a while ago when he told this Christian man, why talk about killing when you're committing suicide, right? When he told this man, the eternal, blissful, natural state has been smothered by this ignorant life. In this way, the present life is due to the killing of the eternal positive existence. So, you know, if you read that and you took that literally, if you believed that the true self could be killed by the false self, well, then this would make no sense, because he says that the true self is already there. So when you read these books, you need to read with clarity, or else the teachers appear to contradict themselves. When you read with clarity, they never contradict themselves. They are, in fact, just speaking to different people on different days, trying to reach them from where they're at, from their current mindset, their current frame of mind, and help move them forward from there. So again, this person says, how can I attain self-realization? And Ramana Maharshi says, Realization is nothing to be gained afresh. It is already there. All that is necessary is to get rid of the thought, I have not realized. Stillness or peace is realization. There is no moment when the self is not. So long as there is doubt or the feeling of non-realization, the attempt should be made to rid oneself of these thoughts. They are due to the identification of the self with the not-self. When the not-self disappears, the self alone remains. To make room, it is enough that the cramping be removed. Room is not brought in from elsewhere. So I'm going to start with the end of this. He says, to make room, it is enough that the cramping be removed. Room is not brought in from elsewhere. I think we've talked about this. I don't remember if it was in the Ramana Maharshi work or the General Healing work or the Nisargadatta Maharaj work, but somewhere recently, I talked about this, that you can't get enlightenment or self-realization. There's no way to get it. It's impossible. And the idea that you can get it from spiritual practice is a complete mistake and actually makes your spiritual practice an obstacle. So if I think that I can meditate or contemplate or forgive and get enlightenment or self-realization, I'm going about the whole thing from the wrong angle. And I'm never going to find it because I don't realize it's already here. Now that doesn't mean that one should stop the spiritual practices. It's just that one needs to understand the purpose of the spiritual practices. Spiritual practices are not to get anything. In fact, listen again to what Ramana Maharshi says. It is enough that the cramping be removed, like a crammed room, like a hoarder. We could say we're all hoarders. We hoard thoughts and we hoard emotions and we hoard beliefs. It's very, very cramped with all the stuff that we hoard, right? And so we don't notice the space in the room. I don't know, have you guys ever seen that TV show Hoarders? I've only seen it, I think, once a very long time ago, but I do remember it. Where they go into someone's house and this person has been hoarding. You know, let's imagine it's magazines. And this person has thousands upon thousands upon thousands of magazines stacked from floor to ceiling, and the only space there is like a small, small walkway through the living room, into the kitchen, into the bedroom. You know, it's like the space in the house is gone, it appears, because there are so many magazines that have been hoarded, right? But in reality, the space in the room is not gone. It's the space in the room that allows the magazines to be there. If there was no space, you couldn't put a magazine there, right? So the space is there. It's allowing the magazines. But it seems like when you walk in, you go, oh, my God, there's no space in here, right? There's no space. Well, in effect, that's what we do, right? We have so many thoughts, so many beliefs, so many repressed emotions, that there's no space in here, or at least it appears that way. Actually, the space allows every single one of our thoughts, every single one of our beliefs, and every single one of our repressed emotions. But it feels like there's no space in here. So we need to do what they do on that show, Hoarders, is we need to clear out, get rid of stuff. And that's really the purpose of spiritual practice. Spiritual practice has two primary purposes, three primary purposes, I'll say. One primary purpose is to let go of what he's calling the cramping, the hoarding. Another purpose of spiritual practice is just to motivate us to do that. You know, we need to be inspired to let go of things that we value, right? I mean, that's why hoarders keep what they keep, right? They value it. So we have to be inspired to no longer value it. We have to be inspired to want something else more than what we've been hoarding. So another purpose of spiritual practice, such as contemplation, is to inspire us to let go of what we hoard. Inspire us to want to no longer believe our own thoughts. Inspire us to want to allow the emotions to arise and leave rather than continue to repress them. So one purpose of spiritual practice is the actual letting go. Another purpose of spiritual practice is to inspire us to let go. And another purpose of spiritual practice is to notice the space, such as awareness, watching awareness, to actually notice the space. And even beyond that, I would say to fall in love with the space. You know, again, if you think of yourself as a hoarder for a moment, and let's just imagine that all thoughts and beliefs and repressed emotions are magazines. The reason you kept all those magazines, even the ones you complain about, you know, you complain about, well, look at this article in here, what they wrote. How could they think that, right? But yet you keep the magazine anyway, even though the political point of view annoys you, you still keep the magazine. So the reason that you keep all the magazines, even the ones you seem to hate, is because you actually value them. So one thing you need to learn to do is to value space more than piles of magazines from floor to ceiling. When you value space more than piles of magazines floor to ceiling, you'll definitely start getting rid of the magazines. So another purpose of spiritual practice is to notice the space and fall in love with the space. That's the ultimate motivation. So we aren't engaging in any spiritual practice in order to get anything. In fact, our problem is we have clung to way too many things. We're hoarders. Now we're learning to uncling. So again, Raman Maharshi says at the end of this, to make room, you know, for self-realization, because that was the question. How can I attain self-realization? And Ramana Maharshi says, to make room, it is enough that the cramping be removed. And then he says, room is not brought in from elsewhere. You can't get the space. You can't get the self. It's already here. You just have to let go of everything that seems to be blocking it. So let's go back and look at this answer again. That was the last two lines of the answer. So let's look at the answer and see if there's anything else I want to share about. The question again was, how can I attain self-realization? The answer, realization is nothing to be gained afresh. It is already there. And we see that. Again, what allows the magazines from floor to ceiling is the space. It's already there, even though you can't tell it because of all the magazines, right? Realization is nothing to be gained afresh. It is already there. All that is necessary is to get rid of the thought, I have not realized. Now, this is really interesting because the ego uses this teaching. The ego uses this teaching to totally ignore the magazines and say, there's space here. There's space here. Even though it's very, very cramped and there's only a small, small walking space through the living room to the kitchen and to the bedroom, right? The ego uses this, just let go of the idea that you're not realized, to avoid genuine spiritual practice. And so this isn't really what Ramana Maharshi is recommending. He continues, he says, stillness or peace is realization. Stillness or peace is realization. Well, one of the things that one of the magazines that we collect is I Am Not Realized. That's one of the magazines in the house. You know, you could let go of many other things. You could let go of jealousy, let go of self-hatred, let go of, you know, worrying about the future all the time. You could let go of regrets, let go of grievances, and still spend a lifetime trying to get self-realization. That's still a magazine. And, you know, that magazine has to be thrown out of the house too. When we are letting go of magazines, we're letting go of all of the magazines. If I'm worried, and I've known many people who have been worried about how to get enlightened. They run around from teacher to teacher and practice to practice and book to book. This is their obstacle. You know, they need to forget about that, let go of that, in effect, throw out that magazine, and they will have the peace. They will have the stillness. Their frantic search for enlightenment is their last ego stronghold. So stillness or peace is realization. There is no moment when the self is not, right? The space is always here. So long as there is doubt or the feeling of non-realization, the attempt should be made to rid oneself of these thoughts. So if I'm one of these people who's desperately seeking enlightenment, then when that idea arises, oh, I just heard about this new teacher, I need to go there. I need to let go of that thought, is what Ramana Maharshi is saying. Seeking enlightenment has just become another ego habit. And if I pay any attention to myself, I can see that's true because I'm as stressed about getting enlightenment as I used to be about getting money or getting a lover or anything else or getting rid of this disease. I only have a minute left, so let me finish this up quickly. So long as there is doubt or the feeling of non-realization, the attempt should be made to rid oneself of these thoughts. They are due to identification of the self with the not-self. If I think I have to get enlightenment and I have to go all over the world in search of it, I'm fully identified with the body, with the personality, right? They are due to the identification of the self with the not-self. When the not-self disappears, the self alone remains. This is where we always hear, let go of the seeker. Again, this doesn't mean stop the spiritual practice, because it's through the spiritual practice that I let go of the one that's desperately seeking enlightenment. It's that idea, that getting. I gotta get it. I don't have it. That's what has to be let go. And with that, I will let go of the mic, and I look forward to listening to Helen with the rest of y'all.